Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David, Minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Secretary and Congregation of Mount Zion, the 12th Hour. In the Elgin, Texas, today is January 31, 2023, or it is the 10th day of Adar, 2026. We will start our first service today with a song. I believe in a hill called Mount Calvary. There are things as we travel this earth, sustain sun, that transcends all the reason of man. But the thing that matter the most in this world, they can never be held in our hand. I believe in a hill called Mount Calvary. I believe what I felt the call, and when time has surrendered, is no more, I shall cling to that old rugged crown. I believe that the Yeshua who was slain on that cross has the power to change lives today. For he changed me completely. A new life is mine. That is why by the cross I will stand. I believe in a hell called Mount Calvary. I believe whatever the call, and when time has surrendered in death is no more, I shall cling to that old rugged crown. I believe that this life with this great mystery, surely someday will come to an end. But faith will conquer the darkness and death, and will lead me at last to my friend. I believe in a hill called Mount Calvary. I believe whatever the call, and when time has surrendered, is no more, I shall cling to that old rugged cross. Title of a sermon, and it is called Why a Church, a Symbol of a Church. That's the name of our sermon. It's taken from the Great Patriarch Paradox of Bavici Hall, Tract Number 2, Paradox of the Ages. And so we're going to go into why the part 2 of the Paradox of the Ages, tract number 2. It says, for the scriptures symbolize the Yahweh's congregation of Israel by the various earthly objects for the illustrating end of that day. Let's start all over again. For the scriptures symbolize Yahweh's church by the various earthly objects. For the illustrating in that day, says the Yahweh, shall I make Jerusalem a burdensome stone for all people. All that burden themselves with it shall be cut in pieces. Zechariah 12:3. This shalt also be a crown of glory in the hand of the Yahweh, Isaiah 62:3, and the seven candlesticks which thou sawest are the seven churches, Revelation 1:20. For the same object cannot perfectly characterize the church with the varying conditions and circumstances or relationships. For example, on the one hand, the church that gave birth unto the Messiah, Revelation 12:1, cannot congruously be symbolized by a church, but rather only by a woman. While on the other hand, the church with which Elohim will break the nations cannot congruously be likened unto a woman, but rather unto a stone, Daniel 2:45, or an ash, Jeremiah 51:20. For a church and its work of a gathering soul as the most fitting symbol is a chariot, and for its leadership naturally horses, as they are in the symbolization before us. For chariots to be identified, we must therefore consider each one of these separately, beginning with the first chariot. For the consecutive order of the chariots indicates a series of the gospel events. In the first chariot were the red horses. That the color red stands for the bloodshed. For the spirit of prophecy bears out. As we were traveling along, we met a company. I noticed red as a border on their garment. I asked the Yashir who they were, and he said they were martyrs that had been slain for him. Early writings, page 1819. The red border on the garments of this company being emblematic of the martyrdom, obviously then the red color of the horses denotes the martyred leaders of the church before 538 A.D. In response unto Zechariah's question as to who the horses were and where they were going, the angel answered, "For the black horses which are therein go forth unto the north country, and the white go forth after them, and the grizzle go forth toward the south country, and the bay went forth and sought to go that they might walk to and fro through the earth." Zechariah 6:6-7. Though the angel's answer discloses the respective directions toward which the black, white, grizzle, and bay horses went, it omits to make the slightest mention of the red horses, thus riveting the conclusion that the red horses were martyred and went nowhere so far as their final destination is concerned. This being clear, our next step logically is for the identifying of the second chariot. Okay, it says, and in the second chariot were black horses. Universally, the figurative significance of the black is bondage. So as the martyrdom of the early Christian church was followed by the dark ages of the religion from 538 A.D. to 1798 A.D., it is very evident that the chariot with the black horses represent the church and its leadership during this long prophetic period in the ecclesiastical Roman bondage of the 1260 years from 538 A.D. to 1798. That was the period of the Dark Ages and the rule of ecclesiastical Rome. the chain of ecclesiastical Rome. This fact is borne out by the angel's explanation of the horse, of the horse's destination. The black horses, he said, go forth into the north country, and the north country is the biblical term for the ancient Babylon, as is quickly seen from the following scriptures. Said the Yahweh, I will bring Nebuchadnezzar, king of the Babylon, from the north, Ezekiel 26:7, again, when the Jews were returning from Babylon unto Jerusalem, Elohim spoke to his prophet Zechariah, saying, Ho, ho, come forth and flee from the land of the north. Zechariah 2:6. Thus identifying Babylon as the north country, but as we are dealing with the fulfillment of the prophecy in the New Testament era, the north country in this connection must be the antithetical Babylon, Christianized Rome, where the Yahweh's people during the New Testament period have gone. This clear-cut truth concerning the second chariot leads us to the exposition of the third chariot. And there were in the third chariot white horses. Since black is significant of bondage, then white being the opposite of black must denote liberty. Accordingly, the white horses with the chariots must be symbolical of the church following the 1260-year period of Roman bondage. Said the angel unto Zechariah, the white go forth after the black horses into the north country. The white church therefore represents a free church, carrying a heaven-born message to the north country. Shortly after 1798 A.D., in the time of the Liberty, the only such message found on the record is that of the Millerite movement, of which we read. Unto William Miller and his co-laborers, it was given for the preaching of the warning in America. This country became the center of the Great Advent Movement. The writings of the Miller and his associates were carried to the distant land, whereas missionaries had penetrated in all the world, were sent to glad tidings of the Messiah's speedy return. The Great Controversy 368. But though the white horses went into the north country, the Millerites, or the first Advent movement, was not in response unto the call, come out of her, my people. This is made clear by the Miller's own words. In all my labors, I never had the desire or thought to establish any separate interest from that of the existing denominations, or to benefit one at the expense of another. I thought to benefit all. The Great Controversy 375. For the concluding revelation is, behold, those that go toward the north country have quieted my spirit in the north country. Zechariah 6:7. After the warning message by the Millerite movement had been rejected by the churches in the fulfillment of the words, have quieted my spirit in the north country, Yahweh withdrew his spirit his spirit from them. And the evidence of this The second angel announced, Babylon is fallen. Revelation 14:8. For the foregoing chain of effects surrounding the first three symbolical church shows that the series of the gospel events which they comprehended terminated with the Millerite movement in 1844 AD, and the additional fact that the white color of the horses also denote purity shows that the third chariot, the symbolical of the church, which of all the seven churches is the only one that is white without the condemnation, the Philadelphian church, Revelation 3:7. For the word of the Yahweh is full of the meaning, its depths unfathomable, and its truth like the waves that ever break on the shoreline, laving the shore of life with the never-ceasing waves, one of which brings in the fact that the Millerite churches, being named Philadelphia, was not merely incidental, for the name meaning brotherly love was divinely designed and will not, in all of the Christian era, fit a church organization other than the Millerite, as the only one that is not guilty of the casting out its brethren for the hearing of a message from the Yahweh, or of the restriction of their religious freedom and the investigating for themselves any purported truth. It alone, therefore, stands free from the guilt and the condemnation underlined in the Yahweh's charge. Hear the word of the Yahweh, ye that tremble at his word, your brethren that hated you, that cast you out for my name's sake, said, let the Yahweh be glorified, but he shall appear unto your joy, and they shall be ashamed. Isaiah 66:5. These heaven condemned became self-appointed. Judges entered not in themselves, and then they were entering in, they hindered. Luke 11:52. To repeat the Millerite or First Advent movement, then, as the only one that never cast out any of its brethren, is consequently as the only church that can be represented by the white church, and the only one worthy of the name Philadelphia, brotherly love. All seven of these antitypical churches, Revelation 2:3, started out well, but sooner or later, Satan succeeded in bringing into each one, and the seventh one was the Seventh Day Adventist Church, bringing into each one in the succession a flood of the satanic agency, figuratively the terrors, and the garb of the professed believers of the truth, especially as it's been so with the ministry, by whom he has been able to lead entire churches astray, and always some of the members who have refused to follow the leadership of man in the place of that of the Yeshua have been cast out. Indeed, for whenever the Yahweh has sent a message into his church, is with the ministry, instead of standing by, let's do that again. Let's do Indeed, whenever Yahweh has sent a message unto his church, the Seventh Day Adventist Church, the ministry, for the ministry, instead of standing by the messenger and helping get the message to the people, has fought against the standing almost as a unit in its way, so that it not reach the people, showing how the ministry used to put an extinguisher on the First Advent message, and how they persecuted the laity who dared attend the Miller's preaching, church history says. But as the ministers and religious leaders decided against the Advent doctrines and desired to suppress all agitation of the subject, they not only opposed it from the pulpit, but denied their members the privilege of attending preaching upon the Second Advent, or even of speaking of their hope in the social meetings of the church. Therefore, it was largely committed unto the humble laymen. Farmers left their fields, mechanics their tools, the traders their merchandise, professional men their positions, and yet the number of the workers were small in comparison with the work to be accomplished. Great Controversy 376. For the work did not stand in the wisdom and learning of men, but in the power of the Yahweh. It was not the most talented, but the most humble and devoted who were the first to hear and obey the call. Those who had formerly led in the cause were among the last to join in this movement. For the Great Controversy 3402, the fact that the message was unto a great extent preached by the laymen was urged as an argument against it. As of old, the plain testimony of Yahweh's word was met with the inquiry of any of the rulers or of the Pharisees believed, for the multitudes trusting implicitly unto their pastors, refused to listen and to the warning, and others, though convinced of the truth, did not confess it, lest they should be put out of the synagogue. Great Controversy, page 380. The true followers of the Messiah do not wait for the truth to become popular. Being convinced of their duty, they deliberately accept the cross. Great Controversy, page 460. For the half-hearted and superficial could no longer lean upon the faith of their brethren. For the Great Controversy, 395. Instead of the question and traveling concerning that which they do not understand, let them give heed unto the light which already shines upon them, and they will receive greater light. The Great Controversy, 528. Who has ever been a class professing righteousness, who instead of falling on to know the truth, maketh their religion to seek some fault of the character or error of the faith in those with whom they do not agree? Such are the Satan's right hand helpers. The Great Controversy, page 519. All who look for the hooks to hang their doubts upon will find them, and those who refuse to accept and obey the Yahweh's word until every objection has been removed and there is no longer an opportunity for a doubt will never come to the light. The Great Controversy, 527. Of all the seven churches of Revelation 10-3, only the Philadelphia and the Millerite church did not run afoul of these same satanic practices ever true to the Yahweh. It closed its brief but spotless career in 1844, its appointed destination, having lived its entire life with the personal supervision of its founder. It was never a new model, thus being without the condemnation, as perfectly illustrated by the third chariot and its white horses. It stands out in a bold relief for the succeeding movements represented by the fourth chariot. Since the first three chariots embraced the history of the church up to 1844 AD, the fourth one must represent a subsequent church organization, successor to the Millerite or Philadelphia Church, the last of the seven churches, the Church of the Laodicea. This city, therefore, is the one symbolized by the fourth church. Amidst the multi-sectarian confusion overspreading all Christendom at the present time, it may seem difficult to segregate the Laodicean from among the rest. But the great designer of the types and symbols, the one who is seeing the end from the beginning, thus foresaw precisely what was to be the condition and the work of the last of the seven churches, must therefore by his word be able to pick this church from among the multitude of the churches and set it like a beacon shining forth in the darkest hour of the night. But even as Satan put forth a determined effort for the misapplying of the name Philadelphia, and thus for the obscuring it from the view and cause it to go unnoticed, so has he confused the name of the last church. Just as the name Philadelphia fits only one church organization, and only one of the church, so the name Laodicea can logically fit only one of the church and only one denomination. The word itself is derived from the Greek word legō dakein, meaning declaring judgment. After the event of the Philadelphian church, there must therefore be a church declaring judgment. It is a historical fact that in 1844 AD, the very year that the Millerite movement came unto the end of its appointed course, a new movement with the name Seventh-day Adventist denomination arose, proclaiming, fear the Yahweh and give glory unto him, for the hour of his judgment is come. Revelation 14:7. In spite of the inevitable record, or the unenviable record of the Laodicean church, the founder of its movement, unlike the founders of the other movements, honestly states in Testimony, Volume 3, page 252, for the message unto the SDA Church of the Laodicean is a startling denunciation and is applicable unto the people of the Yahweh at the present time. For the Seventh-day Adventists, declaring the judgment as well as being in the undone condition, described the SDA Church, is the only one which can rightly be called the Laodicean, declaring judgment. What an absolute mess between description and condition. Oh, magnify the Yeshua, that's the Son, with me. And let us exalt his name, Yeshua, together, for he hath magnified his word above his name. Psalms 134:3, 138:2. Since both the third church and the Philadelphian church have been identified as representing the Millerite movement, and also since the Laodicean church has been identified as representing the Seventh-day Adventist movement, then it uncontrovertibly follows that the fourth church, the last of the church, the symbolical of the SDH, the church, the Laodicean. Now, if this application of the church is wrong, the simple and positive proof is of it cannot be made congruously for the fitting of the SDA church, but if it is right, then by the same token, it cannot be made congruously to fit any other of the other. For the divine symbols are devised perfectly to fit only one object. For the final test, therefore, of the interpretation herein given is the conclusiveness of the paradoxical part of the symbolism, the grizzle and the bay double leadership. Okay. And in the fourth chart were the grizzle and bay horses. Were the anomalous part of this symbolical prophecy is manifested that the fourth chariot, unlike the other three, has a double span of the horses. But most arresting about the whole symbolism is the paradoxical fact that the grizzle went forward or went toward the south country, and the bay went forth and walked to and fro through the earth, Zechariah 6:6-7. For the grizzle go one way and the bay another way, and yet both are pulling the same chariot. Obviously, therefore, this strange circumstance must hold a singular present truth, lesson of the great importance for the SDA Church of the Yahweh at the present hour, when the vision has been opened and the truth unfolded, the time and the Christian Church is confronted with a strange and perplexing problem which the human wisdom is at a loss to solve. For the dissimilar times hitched to the fourth chariot, each pulling in a different direction from the other, show not only that there is double leadership in the Laodicean church, but also that the one is opposing to the other in the character as well as in the purpose. This condition being a strange one, the wise will well consider it, seeing that the word of the Yahweh has spoken it. And that the symbolism perfectly describes the contest which before their very eyes is taking place, they will tenaciously take the hold of the truth. Now for the explanation of the chromatic and enigmatic part of this symbolization, we must go to the past and present record of the Laodicean church. As the message unto every church is addressed unto the angel, that's the minister, the prophet, who has charge of the candlestick of that church, Brother Johnson, he was the last one to have charge of the candlestick at Gilead Center for the Seventh-day Adventist, the church, Revelation 1:20. John was instructed, and unto the angel. And so in 2002, the angel at Gilead Center, Brother Cedric Johnson, is the one that Yahshua is addressing when he comes, when he came to the threshold of the house down there at the Passover 2002. He came and addressed the angel, Brother Cedric Johnson, of the Church of the Latter-day Saints, right, Revelation 3:14. But this angel cannot be a heavenly angel, for he is a fallen. And indeed, our dear Brother Johnson was at fault and didn't know it. Neither could neither cold nor hot, but wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked, and knowest not. Revelation 3:16-17. What else could the angel be but the earthly one who is given charge over the candlestick in the temple of Israel? Finally, therefore, he and the servant whom Yahweh had made ruler over his household to give them meat in the due season, Matthew 24:45, are identical, both of whom clearly represent the church leadership, not the membership. Anyone having a reasonable knowledge of the scriptures should know that the Yahweh cannot finish his work on the earth with the wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked leadership, and what is worse, one that does not even know its condition. Those who are excusing the overwhelming wickedness everywhere are not the Yahweh's true people. They are the tares, the seed of the evil one. Anyone having a reasonable knowledge of the scriptures should know that the Yahweh cannot finish his work on the earth with a wretched, miserable, poor, blind and naked leadership, and what is worse, one that does not even know its condition. Those who are excusing the overwhelming wickedness everywhere are not the Yahweh's true people, for they are the tares, the seed of the evil one. For the message that the Yahweh sends through his servants, says the spirit of the prophecy, will be scorned and derided by the unfaithful shepherds who tread down with their feet the feet of the pastures, giving the flock as food that which they have defiled. Woe be unto the pastures that destroy and scatter the sheep of my pasture, saith Yahweh. Review and Herald, June 25th, 1901. In view of this sad fact, Yahweh must have a second leadership for the finishing of his greatest work since the world began. Of the second set of the servants we read, and I saw another angel ascending from the east, having the seal of the living Yahweh. And he cried with a loud voice unto the four angels, saying, hurt not the earth, neither the sea, nor the trees, till we have sealed the servants of our Yahweh in their foreheads, and in their mouth is found no guile, for they are without fault before the throne of the Yahweh. Revelation 7:2-3, 14:5. Thus, by the testimony and by the symbol, the word of the Yahweh brings to view two dissimilar classes of servants. the one lukewarm, the other without salt. So important is this subject that the spirit of prophecy turns the light on still another aspect of it. But the days of the purification of the church are hastening on apace, for the Yahweh will have a people pure and true. Those who have trusted unto the intellect, genius, or talent will not then stand at the head of the rank and file. Testimony, Volume 5, page 80. The fact that our conferences grant ministerial licenses only unto college graduates shows that they are trusting unto the human wisdom. Wisdom that the Elohim can no more use now than he could when the Moses displayed it. And the fact that they have been following in this foolish course for years is another unimpeachable evidence and a proof that the ministry at the present time is comprised of men whom the Yahweh cannot use, not only because they are independent of him, but also because against his will they have kept out of the work those whom he can use. Now I want to say that the Yahweh has not put any kingly power in our ranks to control this or that branch of the work, for the work has been greatly restricted by the effort for the controlling it in every line. Here is a vineyard presenting its barren places that have received no labor, and if one should start out to till these places in the name of the Yahweh, unless he should get the permission of the men in a little circle of the authority, he would receive no help. For the Yahweh means that his workers shall have help. If a hunter should start out on a mission to the destitute field, crying unto the Yahweh, he would open the way before them. Let me tell you, if your heart is in the work and you have faith in the Yahweh, you need not depend upon the sanctions of any ministers or any people. If you go right to work in the name of the Yahweh in a humble way, doing what you can to teach the truth, for the Yahweh will vindicate you. If the work had not been so restricted by an impediment here and an impediment there, and on the other side an impediment, it would have gone forward in its majesty. It would have gone in the weakness at first that the Yahweh of heaven lived. To be in hell, April 16, 1901. Not until Paul had forsaken all trust in the human wisdom, counting it lost for the Yeshua, was the Yahweh able to exalt him in his mighty hand. And I, brethren, says the great apostle, came not with the excellency of the speech or of the wisdom, declaring unto you the testimony of Yahweh, 1 Corinthians 2:1. But unlike the humble Paul, the great men in the church today are self-sufficient, independent of Yahweh, and he cannot use them. For the call unto this great and solemn work was, since 1844, presented unto the men of the learning and the position. Had these been little in their own eyes and trusted fully in the Yeshua, he would have honored them or trusted fully in the Yahweh, the Father, he would have honored them with the bearing of his standard and the triumph unto the victory. But they separated from the Yahweh, yielded unto the influence of the world, and the Yahweh rejected them. Testimony, Volume 5, page 1882. But the Yahweh has the faithful servant who, in the shaking and testing time, will be dispersed unto the view. There are precious ones now bidden who have not bowed the knee to Baal. They have not had the light that has been shining in a concentrated blaze upon you, but it may be under a rough and uninvited exterior that the pure brightness of a genuine character will be revealed. Testimony, Volume 5, page 80. And it says, but the Yahweh has a faithful servant during the shaking testing time will be disclosed to you. There are precious ones now hidden who have not bowed the knee to Baal. They have not had the light which has been shining in a concentrated blaze upon you, but it may be under a rough and uninviting exterior that the pure brightness of a genuine character will be revealed. I've already read that one. Strike that. Thus, in their perfect mutual harmony, the Bible and the Spirit of Prophecy once again exalt each other and clear the paradox of the fourth trail, this double span of the horse, each of which is revealed by their colors and aims, is inimical in the character, principle, objective, each contesting the right to the chariot, endeavoring to keep it in the south country, Egypt, where they are blindly settled on their lead. For the Grizzle, as the leadership at the very head of the chariot, say in their heart, for the Yeshua will not do good, neither will he do evil. Therefore their goods shall become a booty, and their houses a desolation. Zephaniah 1, 12 and 13. Well, that started with Brother Teddy Johnson at Kermit, Texas. Zephaniah 1, 12 and 13. Whereas the bay, the leadership behind the Grizzles, has seeked to go to and fro through the earth. For the former say he is too merciful to visit his people in the judgment. By the fulfilling of Ezekiel 9 upon them, while the latter saw and cried for the abomination in their midst. Thus, whereas behind the grizzled horses there is the crying of the Yahweh's visitation, there is ahead of the bay a crying of the peace and safety. A man who will never again lift up their voice like a trumpet, for the showing of the Yahweh's people of their transgressions and the house of the Jacob of their sin. For these dumb dogs that would not bark, says the founder of the SDA Church, are the ones who feel the just vengeance of an offended Yahweh. Men, maidens, and little children all perish together. Testimony, Volume 5, page 211. While on the one hand, therefore, we prophetically behold the failure of the grizzled horses for the maintaining control of the church because of their dereliction of the duty, on the other hand, we see the bay horses, both prophetically and actually, getting ready for the taking of over of the chariot at the appointed time, or as the angel speaking in the prophetic past explained, they sought to go that they might walk to and fro through the earth, Zechariah 6:7. Unlike in the color, the two teams are figurative, the two classes of servants unlike in the Cherokee. For the former class, the Grizzle, that represents the general conference of the Jesuits that have infiltrated the Adventist leadership in the form of the Jesuits, Catholics, represents this Grizzle team, are men of the learning and position, but self-sufficient, independent of Yahweh, and he cannot use them. For the latter, the Bay, those that went under inspiration, appointed as a prophet over the candlestick of leadership, unto whom he will raise up and exalt among us, are those who are taught rather by the unction of the Spirit than by the outward training of the scientific institution. For the Yahweh will manifest that he is not dependent on the learned, self-important mortals. Testimony, Volume 5, page 82. This latter class, moreover, had the pure brightness of a genuine apostolic character, but it may be under a rough and uninviting exterior. Unveneered by the higher education, so-called, here we use men for the accomplishment of his purpose, whom some of the brethren would reject as unfit for the engaging in the work. Review and Herald, February the 9th, 1885. And I will gather the remnant of my flock out of all the countries whither I have driven them, and will bring them again into their fold. And they shall be fruitful and increased, and I will set up shepherds over them, which shall feed them, and they shall fear no more, nor be dismayed any more. Neither shall they be lacking, saith the Yahweh. Jeremiah 23:3-4. Though these are servants of the Yahweh, who are to be disposed unto the view during the purification of the church, have not had the light which have been shining in a concentrated blaze upon the others yet, and is stated of them. The most weak and hesitating in the church will be as the David, willing to do and dare. Then will the church of the Yeshua appear, fair as the moon, clear as the sun, and terrible as an army with the banners. She is to go forth into all the world, conquering and conquering. Testimony, Volume 5, page 81. Prophecy, 27:25. Where else in all of the Protestant world, save in the Seventh-day Adventist denomination, as the Church of the Latter Sin is to be found, a fulfillment of the prophetic church history unfolded in this study? If the starting revelation of the present truth, a plain and certain as the conflict itself between the good and evil, does not reach the little sin heart, then nothing can ever reach it. Oh, brother, sister, be not fooled. If this does not reach your heart, now in time to save you from the evil to come, it will surely overtake you eventually, but then only to destroy, not to save you. So stay no longer with the grizzle horses in Egypt. But for to do so would be only to perish there with them, while the Bay leadership take the chariots into the promised land. How about that? That promised land is right here on earth. That's in the land of Israel. Seeing that the chariot is driven by both teams, seeing that the chariot is drawn by the both kings, each pulling in a different direction from the other. Obviously, both cannot win out without their breaking it in two, thus leaving it ruined and useless. One pair or the other, therefore, must be cut out of the traces, and the fact that the bay, the strong horses, Zechariah 6:3 margin, are the ones who walk to and fro through the earth, while the grizzle remain in Egypt, shows that the bay alone are to possess the chariot and to take it from Egypt into the promised land. Although this remarkable prophetic symbolization now opened up fully, was simply another locked prophecy. When the Shepherd's Rod, Volume 1, was published and sent throughout the SDA denomination in 1930, yet in its momentous message unto the Laodicea, declaring that the prophecy of the 9th chapter of Ezekiel is on the verge of the fulfillment, and that those who escape the slaughter will comprise the future leadership of the Seventh-day Adventist Church in the form of another name, with another name, and another movement, for the warning tragically in the singular paradox her reveal was anticipated. Thus we see that from the very fact that the Shepherd's Rod is projecting this preview of the same critical problem encountered in the warning paradox here revealed, was published in the pre-clarification of the Zechariah prophecy, and reciprocally, not only does this remarkable prediction make the word of Elohim appear more marvelous than ever before, but also it sustains the message in the Shepherd's Rod and unveils the outcome of the baffling difficulty before us, the lack of which has never occurred in the history of the Church. Though the leaders of the SD denomination are determined to drive out of the Church all who believe in the message of the Shepherd's Rod, they are trying to make it appear that the rod's adherents are pulling out for themselves. For the paradoxical truth, however, shows that they are for the possessing of the chariot, and that they're refusing for the leaving of the church. SDA Church demonstrates in the actuality that the certainty of the bay horses alone are for the taking of the chariot unto its destination, and that is to and fro through the earth. Earth and prophecy is the United States, don't forget that. And then it goes to and fro throughout the world. For the revelation of this morning paradox also demonstrates that the Yahweh controls the scriptures and brings them into the light at just the very time that his people need to know which way to turn. And now, having found a way, that is, as did the apostles, tarry in the church with the message until told. Get your hands, walk to and fro through the earth. Having thus done our part, it will be said of us, kings of the armies did flee apace, and she that tarried at home, church, divided the spoil. Though you have lain among the pots, yet shall ye be as the wings of a dove, covered with the silver, and her feathers with the yellow gold. Psalm 68:12. So whereas the bay horses are now getting themselves groomed for the going to and fro through the earth, the grizzle are endeavoring for the chicken to bay away from the chariot and keep it in the south country, that is in Egypt, where they've already gone. As I told you, the grizzle horses are invaders. They're the, actually, this Catholics, they're Jesuits that have invaded and taken over the leadership of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, of the grizzle horses. That's reason they have to be circumstantially by the Spirit cut loose at the appointed time, and then the bay will be free to take the pure gospel of the truth with the 144,000 and go throughout all the world, conquering and the conquered. This thing is closed by Stephanie Shower. Contact us at the 11th Hour Corner, number 11, pick on our audio article. We're going to close now with a song.
Lily of the Valley. I have found a friend in Yahshua. He's everything to me. He's the fairest that's important to my whole soul. The lily of the valley, and him alone I see. All I need to change and make me fully whole. In sorrow he's my comfort, in trouble he's my strength. He tells me every care on him to go. In morning star, be the fairest of 10,000 to my soul. May all my grief has taken, and all my sorrows born. In temptation, he's my strong and mighty tower. I have all for him forsaken, and all my idols torn. My heart, and now he keeps me by his power. Oh, how the world forsake me, and Satan cast me sore. Through Yahshua, I shall safely reach the goal. He's a lily of the valley, the bright and morning star. He's a fairest of 10,000 to my soul. He will never, never leave me, nor yet forsake me here. I'll live by faith and do his blessed will. I'll walk far above thee, I've nothing now to fear. With his manner he my hungry soul shall fill. And sweeping up to glory, to see his blessed face, where rivers of delight shall ever flow. He's a lily of the valley, the bright and morning star. He's a very best of 10,000 to my soul.